When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just days before the new year, the New York Times sued OpenAI and Microsoft. Why?
Well, they wanted money for their work.
That's Megan Maroney. I work with her over at Axios, where she's a tech editor on our AI Plus newsletter. Recently, she wrote that 2024 will test not only the development of AI, but also the limits of copyright law and the news business. And the New York Times case sets up the stakes. Before filing suit, the paper was in talks with OpenAI over a deal that would let the company use the Times content to train its models. OpenAI has been doing these kinds of deals with other publishers, like the Associated Press. But the Times, kind of the big kahuna of journalism right now, seems to have wanted more.
It sounds like OpenAI was looking in the millions, and the New York Times says billions of damages. And obviously, like the media industry, in particular newspapers, were not exactly thriving right now. And we've been beaten down by tech companies for decades now, and it's exhausting.
The way the Times sees it, they're spending a fortune creating what's, unfortunately, now called content. That's the articles, investigative pieces, analysis, puzzles, recipes, product recommendations, and more that make up what many of us still call a newspaper. And OpenAI is just taking the fruits of that labor, that newspaper, to train their technology.
The New York Times went in and found that you could prompt GPT-4, I think it was, and above, and it would just reveal, it would just spit out paragraphs of these New York Times features, these really well-researched, people on the front lines talking to people, and would just spit them out, which means that they're using it as an input to train. And then they also might be, putting those paragraphs in a Bing search or a ChatGPT response.
So basically, the New York Times was saying, OpenAI is using our articles to train its AI, to make it smarter, to make it know more stuff. And then when people use ChatGPT, OpenAI's chatbot, they ask it a question, and the thing just spits out mostly a New York Times article to explain whatever. And so then users would never have to go to the New York Times website, which, by the way, costs money. The subscribers pay. So that's a big hit to their business model.
Exactly. And it's not just ChatGPT. It's, the paid version of ChatGPT or the bigger versions of GPT-4, the things that, so big companies have access to these articles. Like someone that might use Microsoft Copilot internally, they might have access. And those companies are paying Microsoft and OpenAI for access to the ability to give it a prompt and have a response, but they're not paying the New York Times.
We've heard this song before. At the dawn of the internet, news sites made the mistake of giving away their stories for free, helping sites like Google and Facebook dominate the ad business that media companies once ruled. The news business then spent the following decades getting crushed by big tech. So today on the show, have they learned their lesson? I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about tech, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
If 2023 was the year that AI went mainstream, it was also the year that the companies behind AI went under the microscope. For all the splashy news about how AI was going to change our lives, there were also lots of lawsuits from artists and writers who felt like their work was being stolen to train large language models.
The record companies have sued Anthropic, which is the sort of, it's similar to OpenAI. They have the Claude model. And so what Claude could do is you could say, you know, write me a song that sounds like Britney Spears or, you know, Ed Sheeran or whoever. And it would come out, you know, with lyrics that were basically, you know, that were copyrighted. And that was in, I think, October, and I'll just be ongoing. Lots of authors have sued because they're, you know, the same technology that people are using, that the New York Times used to find, you know, to discover that their content was in there. You know, the authors are saying that their content was in there without attribution, without compensation. A lot of best-selling authors, George R.R. Martin, who wrote Game of Thrones. Who else? I mean, there's just so many, and there will be more. And along with the people that have, you know, a legitimate claim, there's going to be copyright trolls, basically. The same thing as patent trolls that we saw. People just sort of putting up songs on Spotify and then claiming that someone stole them as soon as someone comes out with something similar that AI created. Or, you know, just so that it's going to be a mess.
What are the AI companies saying in response to these lawsuits? What's their defense here?
Well, the defense of the New York Times was like, we were working on it. We were going to pay you. We were just in negotiations. We're very surprised that you sued us, basically.
That's no defense, really.
No. But I think eventually they will defend themselves by saying this is what we've been through. This we've been through this with search engines. We've been through this with, you know, streaming music. We've been through this with audio cassettes. Like, is every time you get better at copying something, once it makes it easier, once technology makes it easier, you have to figure out how people are going to get fairly compensated. I mean, I remember, like, before the internet, like, you know, just Xeroxing books from the library, you know, five pages from the library so I could read, or, like, you know, so I could read it at home. And that was fine. I never really thought I was depriving the writer of money or the company. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's not usually you and I that are going to benefit from this. It's the giant media companies that own our content that are going to end up benefiting from it. But, you know, once it becomes bigger, then we have to figure out how to get around this problem. So that's basically their defense, that this isn't any different than search. This isn't any different than, you know, being able to check a book out from the library. But it is different. Like, the idea with the library, like, the reason libraries exist is the idea that, oh, well, I'll pick out, you know, I'll read, you know, three George R.R. Martin books and from the library, and then I'll end up buying more of them. That's the idea. But that doesn't really work here. It's like, oh, if I ask ChatGPT to write me something and it spits out a New York Times article, that's probably not going to make me subscribe to the New York Times.
There really is a mutual interest here, because OpenAI doesn't want the New York Times to go out of business, because OpenAI essentially has replaced the New York Times as a source for news and information for everyone. And the New York Times, I guess, they'd probably be better off if it went away. Search has evolved to the point where media companies really need Google search. But along the way, Google and Facebook helped decimate these media companies. So yeah, I guess they need each other, but can't help but think it should have been some other way.
Yeah. And I mean, what's different about this too is that, like, media companies are now experimenting, including the New York Times, with using generative AI within their offices. And the AP has been doing that for a long time, you know, using generative AI to do sports scores or like markets information, stuff that's just like easily spit out. And so like, we're all sort of figuring out, like, we can't just ignore it. We can't just say like, nobody ever used ChatGPT. There's some good uses for it. One lawyer that I talked to, Jerry Levine, he's the general counsel for a small company that uses generative AI to help lawyers read and summarize contracts. And so his argument is that ideally the technology should be able to recognize when it's going to spit out copyrighted content and then source it, like give a link to the source. Like that would, the technology should be able to do that. And I mean, that's the big thing. As journalists, we know that. Like, where's your source? That's what's so frustrating to me when I, you know, use ChatGPT just to like summarize something or, you know, ask it like where I should go in South Carolina or whatever it is that I'm asking it. Like, and there's no sources. It's like, well, is this true or not? And obviously we know, like, if you've been following this, a lot of what ChatGPT and other generative AI produce are not true. Hallucinations is what they call it. So ideally, the technology would be able to source the material, say where it came from, and maybe give like a summary, which is, that's how Google Books, the Google Books was a similar lawsuit that went on forever. Like in the beginning, they could, you know, you could just go on and search any book and get anything from any book. And they just, you know, they went to court and they just finally, you know, figured out a way that to summarize the content and have like small parts of the book.
So that's basically how copyright law kind of changes the development of the new technology and how it could change the development of AI. But maybe we should back up and just talk a little bit about copyright law, as boring as that sounds, and specifically about fair use, because I think a lot of these fights will sort of hinge on what's a fair use and what isn't. So can you explain a little bit about what fair use is and how it would apply in these cases?
A good example of fair use was, gosh, this was probably 20 years ago. There was like the dancing, the like a mom took a video of her baby toddler dancing in the kitchen to the Prince's Let's Go Crazy and put it up on YouTube and, you know, went viral. Like, I guess the first dancing baby someone had seen in real life. And so they took it down and there was this whole copyright. Like, that's not fair use. Like, you're using that to entertain people. And eventually, you know, they decided that that was fair use. Fair use is just, is it copying? Are you benefiting from this in a way and not acknowledging the source? That would be like if something is not fair use. I guess, you know, fair use is using it to entertain. Like, it's satire.
It's like, are you straight up copying something? Or are you using something for educational purposes? Then fair use is usually granted, or that is a fair use. Are you using it for commercial purposes? Then maybe not. Like, there's like a higher standard for fair use, is my understanding. So that's where OpenAI would kind of come into play.
I think that is what OpenAI will say, that what we're doing is fair use.
The company is worth a lot of money right now. They're not just doing this out of the goodness of their hearts to educate the American public.
Right, exactly. And the fact that, like, I think some these copyright lawsuits have been going on for a while. Of course, they became more, like, once ChatGPT like became a household name, then everyone figured out, oh, like, what is this? So they've gotten bigger then. And then also, I think with the, when the board at OpenAI ousted Sam Altman and brought him back, and that also brought not just OpenAI into the more public consciousness, but it also, I think, brought the connection between Microsoft and OpenAI more into the public consciousness. And when people hear, oh, well, OpenAI just heard about it, their pockets are not that deep, but like, everybody knows that Microsoft has incredibly deep pockets. So I think once they've been starting to be named in a couple of lawsuits, it sort of changes the whole game a little bit.
When we come back, why is this issue being handled by the courts instead of Congress?
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. the battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
You talk to people in your reporting about how copyright law could be the thing that winds up regulating AI, not Congress, not a federal agency, but copyright law, slow, plodding litigation. I mean, some of these suits could take a decade to resolve. What should I think about that? Is that appropriate? Is there a better way?
I think it's not always appropriate, and I don't think there's a better way, sadly. I mean, it should be like, it should be a public policy. A lot of these questions should not be answered through copyright law. And that, you know, copyright law shouldn't be used to solve privacy problems. And that was something in my reporting that I found really fascinating. I mean, this was like, I don't know, 2019, IBM was using, not generative AI, but AI to search the web. And they were doing, like, their purpose was good. They wanted to add more people of color into facial recognition software. So they just took, instead of just using like all the people they work with that are often white men, they went on Flickr and just scanned all of these people's photos. And they weren't using them. They weren't going to, you know, put them, you know, use generative AI to like make them say something that they didn't say. But they had the right to do it through the Creative Commons license, which was a way, you know, one of the things that we have developed in order to not slow down photographers being able to put their work out. A lot of people complained. They were like, well, we didn't know our photos were going to be used for that, and that's a violation of our privacy. But like, you know, that's conflating the two, the copyright law and like privacy issues. So they shouldn't necessarily be used to solve those problems. You often hear them, like, you know, you and I as journalists we're scared, like, oh, is ChatGPT, like, if it sucks up enough of the New York Times, is my job gonna, like, am I gonna exist anymore? Or is an AI gonna write all of the stories from now on? And so, like, that's more of a labor issue. And so copyright law shouldn't be solving labor issues either, but it is publicly, like probably not in the courts. But that, I think, the experts and lawyers I talked to, that was the one thing that, one of the big things they said was, like, copyright law is great, it stands, it's all-encompassing, it will solve the problems it's meant to solve. Don't expect it to solve the other ones.
Right. And then kind of the flip side is, I mean, copyright law in the United States is just so powerful. We just saw Mickey Mouse, Steamboat Willie, like one of the earliest iterations, just came off copyright and is now in public domain after more than 100 years. And Disney actively lobbied to change the copyright law to get that extension on the IP. And like for a long time, people have argued that our copyright laws are too strong, and that because they're so strong, they inhibit creativity, they inhibit new technologies, all of this. So in thinking about the New York Times lawsuit and these other lawsuits, is there a flip side risk? We've talked about the risk to media companies, but there's a flip side risk to AI companies that all this copyright litigation will inhibit their growth and development.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. A lot of people argue that these kind of copyright cases are going to inhibit innovation. And that, I mean, copyright law, it's designed to promote innovation. Like the idea behind copyright law is not for like big companies like Disney to make more money off of Mickey for longer. It's the idea that if you or I want to, you know, write a story about two journalists like driving across country to, you know, commit some capers, if we think we're going to write that together and then 2 days later, some other journalists are going to write the same story and they're allowed to, you know, just make money off it, we're going to be like, let's just keep our day jobs. So the idea is, yeah, that it should promote innovation. And often, like you said, it doesn't. And copyright, like keeping copyright longer isn't necessarily helpful for innovation either. But I think when you look at the New York Times, good long form investigative journalism is really hard to do. It's really expensive. And that's what the New York Times says in their case. And I mean, it's true. And so for them to go out and like to pay people to like live in New York City and then go out on the street and interview cab drivers, you know, and talk to hundreds of people and spend time writing and then for an AI company just to suck that up and spit it out for use that you don't have, like, we don't really know how it's going to be used. Like that feels like, I don't know. I mean, we're journalists, so like we're weird. Like we would keep doing this no matter what, but I can see how some younger journalists might look at that and be like, oh, yeah, that seems like not the job to get into. And that's, you know, that's scary to think that it might threaten journalism even more than it already is threatened.
Yeah. Yeah. It really seems like, I mean, just looking back at the past two decades, media companies, the New York Times, everyone, they really undervalued content and journalism. I mean, they put it all on the web for free in the beginning. How crazy is that? The New York Times now is arguing, you know, it costs us millions of dollars to create these stories, original reporting, sending people all around the world. This is like expensive endeavor. It's really very valuable. It's obviously very valuable for OpenAI. And then, yeah, to think like 20 years ago, everyone just put it all out there for free, set consumer expectations. This stuff should be free. And kind of that legacy is haunting, I think, this whole situation right now, right? Where the Times and maybe other media companies need to level set at a higher level to make sure, you know, they don't just disappear because of AI.
Exactly. I mean, and that's what I mean, this is way bigger than this discussion, but my greatest worry is not that it's going to like, you know, I'm not worried about the singularity or it like taking over and Skynet and all that. Yeah. I'm more worried that it's just going to like make us bad at thinking. And I think, and I worry about like, I have young adults, I guess, what do you call 20 and 18 year olds, teenagers, young adults. And, you know, they're living through this. They use ChatGPT for their college and high school papers. And, you know, it's sure it can be helpful, but like it really does make me worry that like writing is how you learn to think. That's why so many, you know, classes involve writing. That's, you know, you sit down, you have an idea, you write it out, and that's how you think. I mean, that's my biggest worry is that it will, you know, the same way, like I can't read maps anymore. I don't know directions. I have to look at my phone.
Megan, I'm wondering if any of these suits are actually successful on the copyright claims, what happens to the AI industry? Does it matter?
Well, I mean, who knows? I mean, it could be like Napster. Like Napster was destroyed because of, you know, these lawsuits. I mean, there could have been a Napster still. I mean, I think there is. Like, I think Napster itself is a company doing something. But like, that's how we could have been sharing music if they had been able to come up with like a way to pay the artists. But instead, it's, you know, we're streaming on, you know, we didn't go straight from Napster being destroyed to Spotify and Apple Music. There was a long time in between. So that could happen. I think what is more likely to happen is just that we're going to have like these tinier AI companies that aren't connected to, you know, that aren't Meta or Google or Microsoft. They're going to have a much harder time at this. And so we're going to have like the big four or five companies, just like we had in search and just, you know, like we've always had. So I think that's probably you know, these companies have huge pockets. They can pay the lawsuits. They can indemnify their users. And so, meaning like if I use Facebook or Instagram's AI tool to create art, and then it looks like, you know, a version of Mickey Mouse that's still under copyright, and I get sued, if I use Instagram, then Meta will indemnify me. They'll like pay my, you know, fees or whatever. But a smaller AI company that does a similar thing, they don't have those deep pockets, so they're not going to probably survive.
And is there also a phenomenon of the smallest not surviving on the other side? Like the New York Times can afford to negotiate with OpenAI, can afford to sue, but like academics, little publications, things like that, are they just not going to be, are they just going to be left behind from AI? Not going to be, you're not going to be able to find that kind of content through these chatbots and things?
Well, I hope that's not the reality, but it's entirely, and that's what, some of the lawyers I talked to said, like, it's the smaller people writing. Again, they might not be inspired to continue writing if they know it could just be sucked up into a large language model and spit out and someone else can take credit for it.
So once again, it's a story of like probably the big guys triumphing. I mean, we already talked about the news industry has just been battered for so long by the tech industry, just smacked around. Can the New York Times, what happens if they don't win? Their copyright claims don't hold up, if they lose in court, if they're on the back foot, what is the worry here for the Times and for the media industry?
Yeah, the media industry, I think, is more to worry about. I think the Times will always be fine. But the media industry in general, the smaller companies that aren't already part of large media conglomerates, that there is a threat, I think, to them. And the other threat is that these just will drag out while the technology continues to move forward. So, you know, these are just like, copyright isn't like, oh, I'm going to make a copyright claim and everything stops. Like, I'm going to make a copyright claim. And then, you know, it's just like the technology can keep moving forward. And, you know, these companies can find workarounds or say that they are linking to sources. I'm sure whatever prompts were put in that are in this lawsuit, OpenAI has already gone in and figured out what they are and how to change it so it's not spitting out these particular New York Times articles. But there will always be more.
The pace, they're moving fast, they're breaking things.
Yes, they're still moving fast and breaking things and asking forgiveness, not permission, all the things.
Megan Maroney, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you, Emily.
Megan Maroney is a technology editor for the Axios AI Plus newsletter. And that's it for our show today. What Next TBD is produced by Evan Campbell, Patrick Fort, and Anna Phillips. Our show is edited by Mia Armstrong Lopez. Alicia Montgomery is Vice President of Audio for Slate. TBD is part of the larger What Next family. TBD is also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. If you're a fan of the show, I have a request for you. Become a Slate Plus member. Just head on over to slate.com/whatnextplus to sign up. We'll be back on Sunday with another episode. I'm Emily Peck, filling in for Lizzie O'Leary, and you can catch me on Saturdays at Slate Money. Thanks for listening.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.